So, Michael, people are going to wonder, why did an officer from the London Metropolitan Police spend 15 years visiting and observing the Detroit Police Department?
That takes me right back to when I was a kid. When I was a child, you know, we watched all the TV shows and the movies about, and it's all American policing, the cop shows, the movies, it's all about American police. And I became obsessed with American policing as a young child. And I believe that's what policing is about. You know, it was so exciting to a kid. These car chases, the guns, the perps, all this sort of stuff to a, you know, a kid in the suburbs in London. It was very exciting. And my father had been a police officer in London. As I grew up, I started thinking more and more about having a police career. But because of my exposure to what I've seen on TV, in my mind, it was an American police career. So I called up the American Embassy in London and said, hey, I want to join the NYPD. And there's a bit of a silence. They said, are you American? And I said, no. And they said, well, no. And they hang up.
Good luck with that.
Exactly. But, you know, I never forgot those sort of dreams and hopes of becoming an American cop. And then some years, I joined the London police as a bobby. And some years into that career, I was attacked at work when I was on duty and I was injured. And I got a small payout from court and I wanted to use the money to come to America. One of the movies I was obsessed with was Jaws and Chief Brody. I thought, I want to go to Martha's Vineyard where they filmed Jaws. So I went there, I met a cop on the island, we swapped patches, and we're still friends to this day. And he said, why don't you come for a ride along? So I did. And that started this journey around America in the back of police cars. And I took 3 months off work, did a massive tour of the United States, started in Alaska, ended up in Maine, went to the Deep South, Texas, everywhere, Midwest, Indian reservations, riding with police departments. And one of those stops was Detroit.
And when was that? I want to get some context.
This was 2004.
Okay, so long before the bankruptcy, long before. Yeah. So yeah, we're talking.
It was a different
years.
Place then, obviously.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago, and I came to Detroit, and despite having been to Baltimore and Chicago and Compton and LA, Detroit was different. There's an edge here, and I describe it as extreme policing. Mm. In fact, the first cop I went out with was Steve Dolan, who recently retired as assistant chief, but he was an inspector back then, and what a great guy he is. And he took me around, and I've never seen anything quite like it. Just the amount of poverty, the amount of crime. Obviously, the first thing you notice, especially 15 years ago, is the blight. You know, downtown was boarded up, it was dirty, there was nothing there. And then the neighborhoods were just an absolute mess. I mean, it's horrific to see. But as a cop, it was fascinating because, as I say, it seemed like the most extreme place to police.
So through the years, you came back and forth. Detroit kept drawing you back. You say you've come to love Detroit. Give us just an idea of some of the things you've seen while you've been going around with Detroit cops.
You know, I've been to homicide scenes. I've got to know gang members. The usual policing runs, you know, car chases, assaults, barricaded men in houses, dealing with drug addicts, all the usual stuff. But it's getting to know the gang members is one of the things that really interests me. So the cops would take me out and I'll just get speaking to people.
So you were getting to know cops and people.
And the regular people. And that's actually, I say in the book how much I love Detroit. And what I love about Detroit, and I mean this genuinely, it's not that downtown's great. It's not that, you know, they've got nice restaurants there now. What I've always loved about Detroit is the people, the cops, but also the people I speak to, because they are generally interested in me and why I'm there, and they want to talk to me. And that's not the case everywhere, but in Detroit it is.
Now, I have to jump right into something that you address in the very first few paragraphs of your book. Why did you call it American Ruin? I mean, you must have expected you were going to take some heat for that title.
Definitely. Me and the publisher discussed this. We're trying to think of a title. And I said, you know, I came up with American Ruin. I said, there's going to be issues with the word ruin. Because, again, the blight and the ruin porn, the dark tourists that want to come to Detroit. This image of Detroit has been going on for decades now. That is not the reason I titled the book American Ruin. Even though it will seem like that to anyone who looks at the cover. Actually, when I was thinking about the title, what really got me on this trip, this research trip for this book, was actually the kids in Detroit. I went to schools, I was speaking to some of the kids who used to be in gangs, who had been shot, who knew people had been killed. And the ruin refers to this generation of children that Detroit is losing to gun violence. And not just Detroit, you know, all across America. And again, not just America, even where I'm from in London, in the UK. The same thing's happening there. Kids are being killed on the streets.
Well, in fact, you even say the crime and poverty that you saw, and I'm going to quote you here. You say, this isn't just Detroit's legacy. This is one that belongs to us all. It is part of the modern history of mankind.
It is. I mean, what's happening in Detroit, you know, its rise and its fall. This isn't just a Detroit problem. This is for everybody. I also say in a book, if you want to know about America, study Detroit. Because what happens here can happen everywhere. And I see elements of what's happening here happening elsewhere. I live in Vancouver now in Canada, and I'm starting to see some things happening there with regards to the disparity in wealth. and again, the gang violence, you see elements of what's happening in Detroit happening elsewhere. So the rise and fall of Detroit isn't just Detroit's history. I think it's part of the world's history.
And when we say rise and fall, and maybe we're cutting to the end, but where do you see Detroit's arc now from when you first came and 15 years ago?
Well, so, you know, when I first came, there was nothing here. You know, there was no downtown. Now there is a great downtown, you know, and it's not just downtown, Eastern Market, Corktown, Mexican mm-hmm. Town, all these nice places. But where do I see Detroit going in its rise and fall in its history? When I speak to people, they see it going in the direction of Chicago, where you're going to have this nice downtown area, which builds up in the outer neighborhoods. You're going to get the crime and the gang continuing. And I see that. And certainly when I speak to people in Detroit, in the neighborhoods, that's kind of how they feel. I mean, I was speaking to a lady the other day, and I asked her what she thought about downtown. And she says, I don't go downtown. She goes, I don't go to these shishi $200 restaurants to eat. That's for people who live outside Detroit. If I want to go and eat, I eat in the suburbs or in the neighborhoods. And she was quite angry about what she was seeing happening to Detroit. I mean, I say in the book as well, you know, you can't be upset about what's happened downtown, because anyone who knows Detroit, anyone who cares about Detroit, must be pleased with the development that's happened down there.
But there's a big but.
There's a big but. It's, you know, everything's about balance, and it seems very, very unbalanced at the moment. Downtown's great, of course it is. It looks fantastic. But outside of downtown, there is another Detroit. It's like two cities. And I think a lot of people don't quite, they hear the stories, they watch the news reports. The 13-year-old kid was shot the other day on the basketball court. A 4-year-old kid was shot. His father was shot. They hear these stories, the recent serial killer they had. Mm. But I don't think people really quite grasp just how bad it is, or how desperate it is in these neighborhoods, and how the kids feel, and how the people that have been there for decades feel. The prosperity that's happening downtown isn't reaching them. One lady said to me, she goes, you know, Woodward Avenue downtown is nicely paved, it's beautiful, but you head north on Woodward and you reach a line where the road condition changes. And she said, that's where the money stops. She's absolutely right. That is where the money stops. Now, it's a difficult balancing act for anyone who's trying to rebuild Detroit. I get that. But it just doesn't seem like any of that money is going outside. And when you've got kids who are in schools with no heating, no books, no pens, no teachers sometimes, they're teaching each other, no toilet roll in the toilets. And yet hundreds of millions of dollars of school taxes are being taken from them and will continue to be taken from them until the, you know, 2050, to be given to a sports arena downtown that they won't visit. It just seems unbalanced.
If you've just joined us, I am talking with Michael Matthews, whose book, American Ruin, is a look at Detroit and Detroit Police Department. Michael is a longtime member of the London Metropolitan Police. He's on leave right now. And so the perspective of someone looking from outside eyes who comes from a law enforcement background got me kind of wondering. Let's compare and contrast about ways that police in London and in Detroit face the same issues. Gangs?
Yes.
Definitely. Drugs?
Yes.
Staffing?
Yes. It's not quite as extreme as what Detroit's going through, but yes.
Racial tensions?
Yes.
Poverty?
Absolutely.
All right. Are there other ways? Are there things I've missed that are,
I mean,
that
all
they share?
All these things exist, you know, not just Detroit, not just London.
Sure.
Everywhere. But it's more extreme here. So we have gangs, and it's been well publicized recently, a lot of stabbings in London. Guns are very, very rare.
And there's where I wanted to get into the important differences. Here in the U.S., and certainly as you saw as you rode with Detroit police officers, guns are ever present, and yet we hear a whole lot, including our president was tweeting about knife crime. And I've heard that from people who live in London. That's a big concern.
It's something the media's really jumped on at the moment, the amount of knife crime that's happening in London and the kids that are stabbing each other. And, Trump tweeted that the mayor of London, Mayor Khan, needed to sort out the problems in London because it's a mess, whatever he said. And I kind of chuckled to myself. I was in Detroit when he said that. And I'm thinking about the problems in Detroit and Chicago and Baltimore. And I'm hearing him talking about London. Yes, crime is getting high in London. The stabbings are getting quite serious. And we are losing children to stabbings and gang violence. But again, it's not to the level. And London's a city of 10 million people, whereas Detroit's, 700,000? Big, big differences there. And we may have 150 murders a year in a city of 10 million people. So yes, we have problems without a doubt. And we do have poverty. But you know, it's not quite the same. There's a professor who did a report. He's actually asked by the Americans to do a report on the state of America when it comes to poverty. And out of 37 countries, the US ranked 35th for poverty and inequality. And you know, you're talking about 40% of children living in poverty. Mm-hmm. Some live in extreme poverty. We're talking millions and millions of people.
It's a story that, as you say, goes way beyond Detroit.
Absolutely. This is not just a Detroit problem.
back to policing, and I kind of want to press you now on something that you wrote. And you wrote it as you recounted talking with an officer about a shooting that he was involved with when he was off duty. He was at a gas station, and he wound up rescuing a man who was being attacked by two men carrying guns.
Yes.
And bullets flew. And I'm going to quote you here. Whether a shooting is justified or not, it is obviously an awful thing for the family of the deceased to go through, but it is also something that takes a terrible toll on the officers and their families. Despite what some want to believe, no cop actually wants to shoot someone. So I have to point out there are way too many cell phone videos of police officers shooting unarmed people, mainly people of color, sometimes in the back. Sometimes, for example, Philando Castile in Minneapolis, he was shot 7 times, even as he was in a car obeying everything that the officer ordered him to do. How do we explain these videos and jibe it with that statement you made?
No one comes to work, no cop comes to work thinking today I want to shoot somebody. I mean, unless they're completely insane. I've been around this country for many, many years. I've ridden with many police departments. I speak to lots of cops. I've never met a cop that actually wants to shoot anybody. I can't imagine there would be a cop that wants to do that.
What do you think when you see those videos?
And I speak to cops about those videos. Mm-hmm. And they look at them and they say, describe it as being a bad shooting. And a cop in New York said to me, he goes, you can never second guess another officer's fear level. Problem with these video clips is that you're seeing a very short segment of time. You don't know what's happened before that. You don't know what the officer was dealing with or the call they've been taken to or whatever it may be has happened beforehand. You also don't understand the environment they're in. And you don't understand that officer's fear level, as the New York cop said to me. So are there bad shootings? Without a doubt. Do I think the officers want to turn up and just murder someone that day? No, I don't. But there are officers that make decisions, and everyone knows about these split-second decisions cops have to make. And some cops make decisions that leave me wondering. And I've been all around this country, and I've seen good policing, I've seen bad policing. For an example, I was in Mississippi some years ago, and the police officer I was patrolling with in a small Delta town, she hadn't even been to the academy yet. So she had a gun and a car and a uniform, and she's patrolling the town with me, and she hadn't even had a training. So the level of training in this country, it varies massively, depending where you go.
What do you think of what you encountered in Detroit?
Detroit, I find officers here are very, very good. Because they are so busy, they become very experienced very, very quickly. You know, I've been to very quiet places mm-hmm. where the cops are kind of bored. And that concerns me far more than an officer who works in a busy environment where they are just that much more switched on. They're that more aware of what's happening around them. And they see a situation that maybe in another town, the officer may, their fear level will go up. In Detroit, it's just another day on the streets of Detroit. So I find them to be underpaid and understaffed, undervalued and under-resourced. But I find them themselves are very experienced, very knowledgeable, far more experienced than officers I've seen elsewhere.
What do you see from the perspective of someone coming from the UK and really spending these years diving into relations between Detroit police and the people they are policing? How would you characterize those
relations?
Yeah,
the first thing I want to say, I'm not a casual visitor here.
No.
I've been coming here for a long time, so
right.
I didn't just turn up saying, I'm going to write a book about Detroit.
No, over 15 years you've done visiting, you've watched things play out. So how would you say things are?
The relationship, for the most part, and this is probably the same everywhere, but let's just talk about Detroit. The relationship, from what I've seen, is generally very good. There's always going to be people that don't like the police for whatever reason. But I find the cops here...
maybe police who stayed on the job too long. And do you think?
It's actually, what you're finding now is a lot of young officers, the older officers are going, and we're getting a very young department now, and that's happening everywhere. That's another issue, inexperience that's coming through. And I mean, to give you an example, I was in the 10th precinct the other day with a cop, and we went to a party store. It was a green light party store, so we went in just to pay a visit. It was late at night, it was in a gang area. We'd already been down the street where all the gang was hanging out, and he was talking to them, and I was talking to them, and they were absolutely fine with us. They liked this cop. There's other cops they said they didn't like. But we're in this party store, and one guy walked in and he wanted to buy some food, I think for his kids that evening. And he had $3 short. So the cop just went to his wallet and gave the guy $3. Immediately afterwards, another guy, who was one of the gang kids we'd just been speaking to, came in. He wanted a bottle of water because it was very hot. It was $1. He didn't have $1. The cop paid for that water. And that wasn't done for my benefit. You know, I want to stress that. He didn't just do it because I was there. This is a cop that's known me for a long time. In fact, it's Sergeant Brannock, who's in the book. This is a cop that's known
tough
me for a long
crusty.
Time.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he's a very experienced police officer.
Yes.
But, you know, he cares deeply about the people and about the city. And I think that comes across in the book, just how much he and other officers actually do care. Because you can't police an environment like this and not care about the people. They take kids to school. They collect the kids and take them for something to eat after school. They really genuinely care. They deal with the criminals, yes. Criminals are criminals. They deal with them. But a lot of these gang guys, they know personally. And they, I want to say that they're friends with them, but they have a good relationship with them. I see the relationship being quite extraordinary, because I've been to other places where cops say to me, you know, they're criminals. That's all they are. They have no time for them. They write them off. But in Detroit, and again, I think it's because of the environment they're in, how busy it is, and how much experience these cops get very quickly, they realize, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. You know, this is a tough place to live, a tough place to grow up. And the cops seem to get that. And a lot of them have grown up in Detroit themselves as well. They grew up in these neighborhoods. I was speaking to a guy the other day. His mum lives in the northeast of Detroit, where a lot of this book is set.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most violent areas of the city. And she still lives there. He grew up there. These aren't guys that are coming in from elsewhere. Some do. But a lot of these cops grew up in Detroit. They understand the streets and they understand the people. So they have a real empathy for them.
What do you want readers to get from reading American Ruin?
This book is a kind of behind the scenes look at Detroit policing. Lots of books have been written about Detroit, not all of them positive. This isn't an attack on Detroit. This book is really, it's an unprecedented look at the Detroit policing and also gangs and about the cities, an area of the city people won't know about or won't fully understand. And the cops here have really opened up to me about their lives, the PTSD they suffer, the crime they've dealt with, how it's affected them. And they talk about how they feel about the city. They've really opened up about that. I was told no other writer's been given this access to the Detroit Police Department. It's not just about the police. This is about the city of Detroit. It's about the kids. It's about the gangs as well and the people of Detroit. It's a real behind the scenes look at Detroit that hasn't been done before.
How did this whole experience, these years of visiting Detroit, and then you'd go back to work in London, how did that just change your view of policing and also of your London roots?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, the London police are kind of like the original police. So Robert Peel started the police. Mm-hmm. It's an enormous force. It's 30,000 police officers in a city of 10 million people. It's a major force, a bit like the NYPD or the LAPD. And here you have Detroit with its, you know, small number of officers. I think they have like 1,500 officers now, working in this environment where they're not as well equipped or as well trained or as well paid as maybe the bigger forces like mine. But I actually learned an awful lot from coming here, and I continue to learn from the cops and from the people I speak on the streets. And again, it goes back to this relationship they have and this understanding, this empathy. We have empathy, of course, you know, in London. Cops are trained in empathy. We know about it. And we do empathize with people, and you can't not when you deal with them all day in, day out, and you see how they live. But in Detroit, you know, I always come away feeling different. It may sound strange, but I come away feeling like I want to be a better cop, because of how I see they police here and see how they are. And yeah, you know, Detroit has this image around the world, and Detroit police has an image. You know, it's a tough town, it's a violent town, it's high murder rate, it's places burning down, Devil's Night, all this sort of stuff. But actually, the cops here are really good. Some people don't want to believe that. They want to believe the cops are violent or they want to shoot people. You know what? You get good cops and you do get bad cops. And you get cops that make wrong decisions sometimes. It doesn't mean they are bad. But the cops in Detroit are some of the best I've ever seen. And some of the best I've seen in America, certainly.
The book is American Ruin, written by my guest, Michael Matthews. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.